When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear.
Earnhardt had to be cut from his wreck and taken directly to nearby Halifax Hospital, where he was pronounced dead due to massive injuries to his head and chest.
Music fans are mourning Joey Ramone, one of the pioneers of punk rock music. The lead singer of the Ramones lost his battle against lymphoma yesterday.
This is the Decibel Geek Podcast with Aaron Camaro and Chris Sinzak.
What's up? And welcome to the hella tight dope Decibel Geek Podcast. My name is Aaron Camaro, and we will be joined shortly by our good friend Chris Sinzak. Yeah, as you've seen on the notes today, we are back in time once again. A little year review action for you. I know you guys love it so much, and we're going back, not too far, but back to 2001. That's what makes it hella tight dope, right? Big words of 2001. Hey, we had a lot of good response to last week's show. I thought it was going to be hit and miss. Some people loved it, some people not so much, but we decided we were going to branch out a little bit into the world of rap rock. And, you know, one thing I realized by doing that is, you know, after all these years, and Kiss should have been in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame a long time ago, but it made me realize why finally, after all these years, they got in. Because when you got artists in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame like Run DMC and Donna Summers, it only makes sense to have the band that wrote not only the greatest hip-hop song of all time, but also the greatest disco song of all time. Oh yeah, I Was Made for Loving You. So Kiss has got to be in there. It's only fair. So I want to thank everybody that shared it with us last week. You know, if you're out there on Twitter or you're on Facebook or wherever you are, if you're out there sharing it, man, we appreciate it so much. Because like we always say, you guys are our marketing department, and this is a grassroots kind of a thing. So I want to go ahead and do Geeks of the Week before Chris gets here and we'll get going with the show. I had a couple of stragglers from the Toby Wright episodes a couple weeks ago. So I want to thank Gary Daggett and Stella Smith for sharing them. But for last week, the Rap Rock episode actually had quite a few shares. I'm a little surprised. Maybe we could do a part two. You guys are on the Facebook page giving us ideas for part two, so if we do it, it's your fault. So let me go ahead and run down the list real quick here for you. We got Big Al, Alan Tate shared it, the Mooger Fooger, Daniel Chaput, I think that's how you say it. I'm not the pronunciator of the show. Chris ain't here yet. Podcasts Are the Best with Andrew Jacobs. That's awesome. Check that out. Always sharing it. Hoops, Nick Rose, Raw Magazine, Loudmouth, Hot Metal Magazine, Faces Rocks Magazine, Music Is My Religion. A lot of cool pages sharing it. And a lot of awesome people like Brad Canoe? Like I said, I'm not the guy. Chad Pollard, Brian Knapp, Mike Stewart, Warren Money, my man, Robin Bennett, Joe Lascon. We got Ian Wadley from the Rock and Metal Podcast. Paul Korn's on the list here. Mark Alden Taylor, Brent Walters, Justin Hayes, Derek Novak, Jeff Hogland, Dave Shirt. I know that guy. Baco, David Alpizar, Colin Francis, Pete LaRussa, Mike Blount, Todd Cunningham, and Matt Ashcraft. You guys are our Geeks of the Week. I see a lot of names in there that are reoccurring Geeks of the Week, and we love you guys so much.
2001 seems like yesterday to a lot of us, especially right. Us middle-aged guys. But, you know, when you think about it, this is 14 years ago of this recording, so it's a long time ago. So 2001, some of the cost of things. The average cost of a new house was $136,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was $1.46. And the cost of a pound of bacon was $3.22.
Yeah, that's talk about like the years that we've done in the past in comparison.
I think that's
to that.
More that's, than it is now. Is it?
It may be.
There was a lot of bacon inflation back in 2000.
Yeah, and gas wasn't really that much different.
Mm-mm.
I mean, up and down, a lot in between, but
well, it was a lot different after something that happens later on in the year.
Right. Yeah, everything changes. So this is you know, of course we do these year in reviews, and it's all through the eyes of rock and roll, you know, and that's our perspective on it. We're just gonna have some fun, and we're doing 2001. I know a lot of people are gonna probably say the same thing that they said about the other more recent year in reviews. You know, like, yeah, we did 2000. It was like, did anything good come out in 2001?
Right. Yes.
Well, of course. Of course there did. You know, was it top of the charts? Some of it maybe, some of it not. Most of it not.
Most
you know,
not.
Not our kind of stuff. You
well,
know?
Yeah, what we're doing is like we're, consider us your filter. Like,
right.
You were bombarded with the crap on radio, and if you really wanted to get in, you have to dig to find the good stuff.
Right.
We're your audio shovel.
There you go. I like that.
I'm using like Paul Stanley analogies.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
The Decibel Geek podcast is like a pack of wolves. It's a lifestyle. You know,
yeah, right.
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, I guess we'll start off the year with the first big story. You know, the internet's starting to get more accessible by everybody by 2001, and that brings the invention called Wikipedia.
Yes, our research team.
Our research team here at the Decibel Geek podcast. We, you know, couldn't do it without Wikipedia.
Of course not.
And, you know, for the price of a cup of coffee, you can help keep Wikipedia free. And you should, because everybody uses it.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm supporting this little kid in Africa for the price of a cup of coffee per day, and he helps me with research. That kid knows a lot about docking. I don't know why a little kid in an African tribe knows a lot about docking, but he does.
Well, I mean, as long as you're contributing to our research team in one way
I'm
or another.
Really resisting the urge to make a breaking the chains joke.
Oh,
all right. Okay.
No,
moving on.
To edit that out.
Nah.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so we go on to January 20th, and George W. Bush is sworn into the office of the presidency of the United States of America.
I remember this.
Worst president ever? I don't know. This isn't
we're not getting into
this
that.
This isn't a
You're
political
getting onto
show,
me for what
so,
I say.
You know. Oh, yeah. Well, this isn't a political show, so I guess we'll just get right to the rock and roll. So here's my first pick from 2001. This one came out on January 23rd. It's their fourth independent studio album, and it's their final before getting signed by Atlantic. I'm talking about the Donnas. Now, this marks the beginning of a change in style from punk rock to straight-ahead guitar rock. Think, you know, less Ramones, more AC/DC, because their early stuff was very, you know, Donnas. Ramones, you know, they're very similar, but now they're starting to find more of their own style. You know, this album's got some good tracks on it. Tunes like Do You Want to Hit It, Play My Game, Are You Gonna Move It For Me, and Don't Get Me Busted. Also includes a really cool cover of Judas Priest's Living After Midnight, and it's a great album. Donna's turned 21, come out in 2001. That's where we're starting out today for rock and roll. Sad that band's not around anymore.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. I enjoyed them. First time I heard them, as a lot of Kiss fans did, it was a cover of Strutter that they did on the was that on the tribute album?
No, the Detroit Rock City
Detroit
soundtrack.
Rock City soundtrack. Yeah, it's a good band. I mean, yeah, I wish they could get back together again. Okay, so my first choice, and this is a band that Rich the Meister Dillon, our head writer, has tried for a long time to get me into. He loves this band, and I think they're good, and they've been around a long while. I'm talking about Primal Fear, and they're a German power metal band formed in 97 by Rolf Schiepers, who was the vocalist of Gamma Ray, and Matt Sinner, who was bass and vocals for the band Sinner. They formed the band after Sheepers was not hired as Rob Halford's replacement in Judas Priest. So I guess
these are all names that ring a bell from our Germany Rocks episode.
Yeah, I know at least Matt Sinner is.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, Gamma Ray also came up on that. And so, yeah, I guess this guy was up for the job in Priest before Ripper got the job.
Hmm, interesting.
And you're going to hear, you'll hear the Rob Halford-esque vocals here in this track here from an album called Nuclear Fire that came out on January 29th. During the tour for this album, the band played in the U.S. for the first time, and they were a guest at festivals like the Milwaukee Metal Fest and the Metal Meltdown Festival.
Nice.
And they've released 10 studio albums, including last year's Delivering the Black. Now, I've tried listening to this band and tried getting into them. They just don't fully click for me. I do love that song, and yeah. I think I'd probably like a handful of songs, but just
because it kind
of
sounds like a mix between, like, you know, European power metal and kind of thrash metal too, yeah, like melded together.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that new wave of British heavy metal.
Yeah, I hear a little overkill in there.
Yeah, I mean, there's good stuff, and they're a talented group of guys. It's just some of the songs just don't click for me all the way. But that's Primal Fear.
You know what else is not clicking in 2001?
What's that?
The relationship between the members of the Eagles.
that didn't click in any year.
Yeah, that's true, but it definitely came to a head in 2001 when on February 6th, longtime guitar player Don Felder is fired from the band.
Yeah, and if you read his autobiography, boy, it's quite a story.
And there's some footage of YouTube of the night when the shit hit the fan with those guys, you know.
Oh, back in like 80 or whatever. Yeah.
Was that the yeah. footage from the 80s when they were fighting on stage?
Yeah. Man. Basically what it was is Don Felder never got along with Glenn Frey and Don Henley real well, because Frey and Henley were, at the time, towards the end of the 70s, early 80s, they were getting very politically active.
Right.
And Don Felder just wanted to play his guitar.
He just wanted to rock and roll.
He didn't care about any of this cause stuff that those guys were into. So they dragged the whole band to this fundraiser thing for some politician.
Yeah.
And they're standing behind him while he's making his speech, and the guy turns around and thanks all the members of the Eagles for coming, and he's shaking each one of them's hand, and Joe Walsh and everybody are being polite and going, "You're welcome, no problem." And when he gets to Don Felder, he goes, "You're welcome, I guess." And it pissed off Glenn Frey. Got really angry. So then the whole night, then they had to play a show that night.
That's funny.
And the guy that was their engineer or whatever, their sound man, recorded everything, you know, did a soundboard recording.
Right.
And you could pick up the argument on the board tapes between songs. And like,
they're saying, "I'm going to kick your ass."
Oh, yeah. You hear Glenn Frey threatening him. He's like, "I'm going to kick your ass after this. I can't wait." And he's like, "Yeah, I can't wait either. You treat your employees real good, Glenn."
Wow.
Yeah, it was really ugly. And read Don Felder's book. It's a great book.
So Don Felder was like the Ace Frehley of the Eagles.
Joe Walsh was the Ace Frehley of the Eagles. but now Don was more about, you know, "You got to pay me my fair share, and you know, we shouldn't be doing all these stupid fundraisers and stuff like that."
Yeah, he helped write the song Hotel California.
It's his riff.
Yeah,
he came up with it. But yeah, interesting story. Another interesting story: in February 2001, FBI agent Robert Hansen is charged with spying for Russia for 15 years. This is it's an incredible story. There's a movie called Breach that does a good job documenting what happened. But yeah, this guy was like way up in the FBI, and you know, one of our top agents, and he's supplying the Russians with information. They got lots of people murdered
for 15 years.
Yeah,
wow.
He was taking lots of money to give this information on, and people were getting killed left and right because of what he was doing.
That sucks.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy story.
Good thing they finally busted him.
Yeah, they did. He's still in prison right now.
All right, back to the rock and roll. If you guys have been listening to the Decibel Geek podcast for a little while now, you guys definitely know about the band Hair of the Dog. You know, we've been talking. We were good friends with the Big Rock Show, you know, and Ryan Cook is the lead singer of the Big Rock Show and also the lead singer of Hair of the Dog. Now, in 2001, their third album comes out, and it's the follow-up to the previous year's Michael Wagner-produced Rise. Now, before the recording of Ignite could begin, and that's the name of the album, Ignite, lead guitarist John Sepetys developed a condition in his hand that hindered his ability to play. It forces him to bow out of the band. Man, his absence really shows on this album. If not in the playing, then I'd say definitely in the mood of it. It fails to deliver the same punch the previous two albums, but you know, there's a few different things contributing to that. Maybe it's the fact that Spitfire wouldn't pony up the cash to get Michael Wagner back to produce this one, you know, because the previous one sounded so great. Or maybe it's because the band and the label are pretty much butting heads over the sound, the direction, the support, and yeah, even the paying of the band at this point. But, you know, despite all of that, this is still a pretty damn good rock album by a highly underrated band. This album's packed with some great songs, but you know, the thick, lush, bombastic sound that you get with Michael Wagner producing just really isn't there on this one. Instead, at the insistence of Spitfire, you get a more modern, like 2001 rock radio, kind of Creed, Three Doors Down, Stained kind of production.
Exactly.
And, you know, it just doesn't work for this kind of band.
It's very modern rock sounding.
Yeah, you know, I definitely prefer Michael Wagner producing this band because he knew that these guys were a straight up rock band and he produced them in that way,
yeah.
Which few do it better in that style than Michael Wagner.
Well,
you can
hear that it has an old school sound to the songwriting. So
right.
It would have been nice to have a big thick guitar tone to that.
Right.
That almost has an industrial feel to it.
Kind of. That
yeah.
song does, you know, and that's that track that we sampled there features Boot on lead vocals along with Ryan Cook. So
Boot.
That's pretty unique too. It's a good, you know, the songs are great. The album's really good. Doesn't kind of match up to the other two, but still definitely worthwhile checking out. And sadly, this would be the last Hair of the Dog album.
Yeah, and if you're in Nashville and Big Rock Show's playing, don't miss it.
Yeah, but don't get out there and scream play some Hair of the Dog.
No, that's not fair to the other guys. And then don't look at Paul and scream, I want to hear Winger either.
Right,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we move into March. And
Supergroup.
There was a... Well, it's kind of I guess for Kiss fans, this was a big story, wasn't it?
Yeah, a real big story.
At March 9th, Eric Singer wears the Catman makeup for the first time on stage in Yokohama, Japan.
Yeah.
And if you don't...
It would be the first time a member ever wore the makeup of somebody, different member of the band.
Yeah, that's true. And if you don't know what happened, I guess Peter Chris was trying to renegotiate his contract while the tour was going on, and... they couldn't come to terms, and Paul and Gene said, well, we'll just go do Japan and Australia without you, and we'll get Eric Singer back.
Yeah? Didn't that happen once before, and one of the drum techs had to sit in for him with the makeup on?
Well, that's one of those who-do-you-believe situations.
Yeah.
I mean, when it happened, the official story was, at the time, was Peter's tendonitis had flared up so bad in his arms that he couldn't play.
Yeah.
And they gave him the night off. But it was like it was a last-minute decision, and they're like, well, everyone's in the arena. We can't really cancel now.
Right.
This
2001 was a little different
but,
than that.
But, you know, in years past, Gene and Paul, I think, have claimed that, no, that wasn't the case, and Peter was, like, trying to put his foot down about more money. I don't know. All I can say is that show was in Columbus, Georgia in 97, And I saw them the very next night in Nashville.
Yeah.
And Peter played amazing.
And he killed it.
Yeah. So I don't know how much his arms were hurting or not, but he was great. Mm. I was just thankful that I got to see the original band the next night, because I was on the internet the day before going, oh, my God. You know, I'm paid all this money to see the reunited Kiss, right? And I'm going to get stuck watching a drum tech play.
Man, that would suck.
But no, he played the next night, and they were great.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm sure they were great in 2001 when they were playing with Eric Singer, too. You know,
oh, there's some great footage on YouTube of that.
You know, yeah. And it's funny, too, because you'd think that that's when the backlash would truly begin, but... You know, Eric Singer kind of gets a pass in this whole thing that he's a longtime member of the band.
Some people freaked out, but when Tommy started wearing the makeup, all of a sudden all the hatred went Tommy's way.
Right.
So, but yeah, it was a big news story. I remember kind of being shocked when I saw the pictures of Eric in the makeup. I was like, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
But all right, so we're not a Kiss show. Let's move on. All right, so I have the next
pick. This week.
Not this week. We have been a lot lately, haven't we?
Yeah.
All right, so for my next pick, we're in March. On March 5th, Aerosmith releases Just Push Play, one of the favorite albums of all the diehard fans.
Not me.
I don't know. Most people called it Just Push Eject.
Yeah.
It was their 13th studio album. It did chart well initially because of the single Jaded, which did well. And honestly, I'll admit, I like the song Jaded. I think it's a great song.
I mean, it's a well-written song. It's a good top 40 hit. You know,
if I'm in 1976 or whatever listening to Get Your Wings, and then somebody played that, I'd be like, what the fuck?
But, yeah, exactly.
But Jaded as a song and as a songwriting thing is a well-executed song.
Sure, I'll give them that.
Yeah, okay. The album did go platinum, but then they released 4 subsequent singles that didn't do much at all at radio. So, you know, this was kind of Aerosmith. The bloom was finally off the rose a bit with this album, you know, because they were hit machines all before this.
Is this the one who was the pink album cover with the robot chick on there?
Yeah, which was a ripoff of an autograph album cover from the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, I wanted to play something off this album, though, but most of the regular version of the album I don't really like, honestly. but there's this song that comes from the Japanese version of the album that I think is pretty cool. That song is called Won't Let You Down, and I think, you know, that may be the grittiest thing on the album. It's a very pop-sensible album, you know, but I think that one kind of sticks out.
If that's the heaviest thing on the album.
From what I can remember, yeah. Not that I went back and really dug deep listening to this one again. But a couple of quotes about this. In 2010, Joe Perry revealed his distaste for the album, and he said, I don't think we've made a decent album in years. Just Push Play is my least favorite.
Oh, my goodness.
When we recorded it, there was never a point where all 5 members were in the room at the same time, and Aerosmith's major strength is playing together.
Right.
It was a learning experience for me. It showed me how not to make an Aerosmith album. So that was
kidding.
That's a harsh thing to say. I also read somewhere that Joey Kramer actually likes how the album turned out himself. But, you know, different strokes for different folks.
So you listen to that and be like, Joe Perry, did you even play on this album? I don't hear hardly any guitar on it.
We have another...
way down in the mix.
We have another episode we're going to be recording at some point soon where we'll get into Joe Perry not being on an album.
All right.
But, yeah, so that's Aerosmith from 2001.
All right, my next one, it's kind of funny because it goes hand in hand with that. This is another album where the leads... Well, I'm going to talk about Clutch right now. They came out with the album Pure Rock Fury in 2001, and this is actually Neil Fallon's least favorite Clutch album.
Really?
Kind of like that old Just Push Play. This is their 5th studio album. Of course, these guys from Maryland, they're rock and rollers. We've talked about Clutch a bunch of times here on the show. Great band. I like this album. I think there's some great songs on it. It's got the rap rock song Careful With That Mic, which is pretty cool if you're into that sort of thing. It's really cool. The title track's kick ass. Immortal's a great song. Smoke Banshee, Drink to the Dead. If you love good heavy Black Sabbath style doom metal, you can't go any. You just need no go no further than Clutch.
They'll never be. No one will ever say that they don't have an original sound.
Definitely. Yeah.
If you hear a Clutch song, you know it's Clutch.
Very unique sound. Yes. Pure Rock Fury 2001 goes to 135 on the U.S. Billboard Top 20. Not huge, but not bad. You know, for Clutch, that's not bad. The album features special appearances by Wino from doom metal pioneers Saint Vitus, and Leslie West from Mountain does some work with him on this album. You know, Mississippi Queen, Mountain.
Amazing guitar player.
Very cool. Definitely check that one out.
All right, so
up to you.
We're still in March. We're at the end of March now. On March 27th, Buck Cherry released the album Time Bomb. Now, I know that Buck Cherry is kind of a divisive band for some people. Some rock fans love them. Some rock fans hate them. I personally love them.
I think they're all right.
I've always liked them. And I love their raw sound that they have. And, yeah, maybe they use the F word too much. And that does get tiresome after a while because it's like, okay, guys, we know you like to say fuck.
Again, this is one of them bands where, you know, I think I'm kind of in the middle with them where it's like we talked about that last Hair of the Dog album where I like the songs. And I like the style, but the production doesn't seem right. You know, if Michael Wagner got a hold of Buck Cherry and put out an album, it would probably blow minds.
Well, the best way to experience Buck Cherry is live in a club.
Yeah.
And the local state rock station here, The Buzz, did a show a few years ago, and it was Buck Cherry, Blackstone Cherry, and Saliva in a club.
Yeah.
And the other bands were good.
Cherry, and Spit.
Right. And Buck Cherry came on, man. They were fucking great. And I liked them before this, but I really liked them after seeing them live.
Yeah.
So maybe that is the thing. Maybe it's the production that's the issue for some people. Because you see them live, and they're a great rock and roll band.
Right.
So they put out their second studio album in 2001. It was the last one with their original lineup. The hit single off this one was Riding. That one got a lot of airplay.
Yeah.
This one's kind of my favorite of it. This is Buck Cherry with Whiskey in the Morning.
On it. You can keep all your music on it. You can even burn CDs on it. You can keep thousands of digital photos on it.
can even organize your organizer on it. You can keep your life on it. The new iBook. Would you like that to go?
You're watching The West Wing on NBC.
NBC Thursday.
I'm going to kiss you like you've never been kissed before.
Woody's back for 2 weeks, and he's taking his romance with Grace to a whole new level. Then it's the Just Shoot Me season finale. A wedding, Jack's ex-wife,
and a surprise ending.
Oh, my God.
Need we say more?
NBC Thursday. Primetime Sunday on NBC.
I love it.
It's the new Saturday Night Live Mother's Day special. The SNL stars and their moms. Primetime Sunday on NBC.
All right, you're listening to the Decibel Geek Podcast. We're back for more year in review of 2001. Having fun so far.
Yeah, and it's bringing back memories. I mean, during 2001 is when I started to clean up my act a little bit, so yeah. I have a little bit of memory of this year.
Right on.
Yeah.
I think 2001, boy, yeah, right around a year after Ace was born, I was still working in radio, and yeah, I was all right. I had a good head on my shoulders for a little while yet.
This was the year I moved from Nashville to Kansas City.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, going back to the year in review, we always got to do our sports. We got to look back at sports in 2001. And 2001 is the year of Vince McMahon's XFL.
The year.
The year. Because it was only 1 year. It was meant to be an off-season alternative to the NFL. It only made it the one season. And, you know, they tried to take football and make it kind of more wrestling-y.
I think it was scripted.
You think it was?
Well, yeah.
People think the NFL's scripted.
Well, I think the XFL was definitely scripted. Like, I watched the first game. It was the LA team and the New York team, I think.
Yeah.
And it went like three overtimes and all these dramatic things happening back and forth. I was like, I think I'm having my leg pulled here.
That wouldn't surprise me in the least.
It was fun until that hit me. I was like, this is awesome. And then it hit me. I'm like, I bet this is fake. Yeah.
You just can't forget He Hate Me.
He Hate Me, yeah.
He Hate Me, the biggest name to come out of the XFL.
Yeah, he got to the NFL.
Talk about football. Let's talk about real football. Super Bowl 35, the Baltimore Ravens 34-7 over the New York Giants. Super Bowl MVP Ray Lewis. And he was killing them that year.
He was killing them other years.
He was in baseball, only four seasons into their existence, the Arizona Diamondbacks defeat the New York Yankees.
Yeah,
that's pretty wild.
Anyone that beats the Yankees is okay in my book.
In the NBA, it's the Lakers over the Sixers, but the big news in the NBA that year is Michael Jordan returning after 3.5 years to play for the Wizards.
The Bullets.
The Bullets?
Yeah.
Were they the Bullets back then?
Yeah, they'll always be the Washington Bullets to me.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah, I know. I will never call them the Wizards.
No?
I don't get into that politically correct bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't call the Redskins the Washington Football Club. They're the Redskins.
You know, big news in the year of sports and NASCAR, the champions, Jeff Gordon, it's his fourth championship. But again, the real big news in NASCAR, of course, is Dale Earnhardt dying at the Daytona 500.
That was so sad.
You know, that was the first NASCAR race I ever really sat down and watched.
Oh,
you know,
that so it's your fault.
That made me think that NASCAR was staged too, and that I didn't think Dale Earnhardt was really dead, that it was just a big ploy to people to tune in at first.
Yeah, I was like,
at first, you know.
If that's true, then he's pulling one hell of an Andy Kaufman thing, right?
Yeah, but, you know, if you think about it like that, and no disrespect to Dale Earnhardt, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm just kind of speculating, you know, what if, you know, if that were the case, that brought a lot of attention to NASCAR.
Oh, totally.
Because that was a big race. It was on. I remember sitting and watching it. You know, my dad was watching it. There was other people watching it. So it was a big race. If it was going to happen and bring some excitement and say, hey, this is a dangerous, exciting sport, you know, that people could lose their lives doing this.
Yeah.
That was the night to do it.
It was crazy. I remember watching... somebody in my family was watching it that day, and I just walked into the room because they were like, oh, wow, did you see that wreck? And then we sat and watched it.
But it wasn't much of a wreck. It didn't look like much.
But the way they were talking about it on TV, they were like, that's a serious accident. Because I guess Darrell Waltrip was in the booth, and he was mentioning how he was like, and he even said, it doesn't look like much to the general public.
Right.
But as a driver, that's a bad accident.
You know, and he wasn't known for being a guy that took safety precautions.
No.
You know, he was...
he was called the Intimidator.
That's right. He was badass, you know. Probably the most badass race car driver ever.
As close as NASCAR got to a rock star.
Heck yeah. Also in 2001, Evander Holyfield loses the World Boxing Championship, and... really, you know, 2001 is kind of the end of boxing. I mean, Evander Holyfield's the only boxer I can remember, like, name by name since then. Can you name a boxer since?
Oh, there's a big deal with the whole Pacquiao Mayweather thing coming up here.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, like, big boxing, you know?
But it, yeah, but now that was huge. When it was heavyweight boxing. Now it's like middleweight now.
Yeah, I'm talking about heavyweight boxing.
It's weird that heavyweight boxing is not the biggest now.
No?
It's like middleweight stuff. But yeah. And oh, yeah, that was when heavyweight
was a big deal. Even that, boxing is just not as big as it was. You know, and I think what happened MMA. Was 2001 was the year that Dana White took over running UFC. So by the end of 2001, things are really starting to take off, and they've got stars like Tito Ortiz and Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell. Yeah. So as UFC's on the rise, boxing's going down.
Yeah, it's huge now. It's I remember at the time going to UFC, what a joke, and now it's bigger than boxing.
See, I remember it even before 2001, getting it on VHS, and it was just kind of like cage fighting and just being blown away by, you know,
it's pretty brutal.
The brutality of it, which it's exciting, but, you know, at the same time, nowadays it's like it's so oversaturated that, you know, how many times can you see two dudes fight? It's usually about the same thing, you know.
Yeah,
you can't follow nobody because every time they have a match you don't see them again for 3 months.
Right,
I'll stick with pro wrestling, thank you. In 2001, the first guy to ever simultaneously hold all the major golf championships. Oh yeah, it was the year of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, boy, things have changed since then.
Yeah, a lot of things have changed since then. You know, that guy was everywhere, you know?
The Michael Jordan of golf.
Totally, totally. And he was at his peak in 2001. In the Stanley Cup, it's the Colorado Avalanche as the champions. And, you know, funny thing, too, talking about, like, Tiger Woods and how much things have changed in 2001. It's funny because although Andre Agassi would give up smoking the meth and would have a major comeback, the male athlete of the year is the oh-so-respectable and honorable Barry Bonds. That's crazy.
Andre Agassi was a meth head?
Yeah.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, he was, because he was big before this, and then he was gone.
I didn't know he was smoking meth.
Yeah, he was a big meth head.
Wow.
And then he put it all away and made a major comeback. Mm. But if you're talking sports in 2001, obviously the biggest news story of the year in sports is the fact that after a successful knee surgery, Hulk Hogan returns to the ring in Orlando, Florida for Jimmy Hart's XWF promotion, where he defeats Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, and sets course for him to return to the WWE for the first time in nearly a decade. And within a year's time, Hulk Hogan would be main eventing WrestleMania once again.
I thought you were reading off sports stories.
I am. That's the number one sports story of the year.
Sports entertainment. Okay, so a sad story from April. We moved to April 15th, and Joey Ramone passes away, which is a huge loss to the world of rock and roll.
Yeah, big time.
Only 49 years old, too. Just too damn young. He had, I think it was non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is what he passed away from. But, yeah, it's really shitty because, you know, he had put a solo album out around this time. It was called Don't Worry About Me. That's really, really great. And
yeah.
I would have loved to have heard more solo stuff from him after the Ramones, you know.
Yeah, it's a bummer. You know, I remember that being a big deal in 2001. And as a matter of fact, we lost a lot of, you know, really important people in rock and roll that year. And we're going to hit them as we go on, you know. But we just definitely got to stop and, you know, pay a little tribute to Joey Ramone because, let's face it, man, the world is just not the same without
it's
the guy.
Not. It was a better place with him on it. So you've got the next song.
Right? Yeah, I got the next song. And, you know, the 90s were a very strange time for a band like the L.A. Guns. You know, they had success with Hollywood Vampires in 91, and they decided to try to ride out the grunge movement and not release anything new till 95. That's when they come out with Vicious Circle, which fails to even chart. It leads to Phil Lewis leaving the band and Tracy Guns taking the band in a more metal direction with a new lead vocalist named Chris Van Dahl and the 96 album American Hardcore. Now, by 97, Van Dahl is out, and future Steel Panther vocalist Ralph Saines is in. By 99, Ralph is out, and Jizzy Pearl is in for the Shrinking Violet album. It's an amazing album. It got no push, you know, because not long after it was released, the classic LA Guns lineup would reunite and release a live album and begin work on 2001's Man in the Moon.
Misery. It's got to be that I
Well, it's almost a full reunion. Tracy Guns and Steve Riley have been there all along, and Phil Lewis and Mick Cripps are back, but no Kelly Nichols on bass. Producer of the album, Gilby Clark, produces his own bassist to come play. A guy named Muddy Stardust laid out on the low end on this one. It's a great album, but, you know, it's still a funny time. There's an event that's going to happen later on in the year in 2001, but a little bit longer before bands like this could shed that stigma of being in 80s hair band.
Yeah, and they always had that stigma. Of course, the name just kind of screams it, doesn't it? I mean, well, L.A. Guns kind of sounds like that.
They were forefathers, sort of, you know, of that second wave out of L.A., so, you know, of course they're going to be hooked to it. And like I said, later on in the year, it's going to become cool to like these kind of bands again, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. So we're still in April. On April 24th, a band called Treble Charger releases an album called Wide Awake Board. Now, who's Treble Charger, you may ask? I'm sure you are.
I don't have any idea.
This is a band where I didn't know anything about this song back in 2001. I just found it doing research, but I was like, well, I missed this, so maybe other people did. They're a Canadian rock band formed in 1992 in Sault Ste. Marie, consisting of lead vocalist and guitarist Greg Norrie and co-lead vocalist and guitarist Bill Priddle. The band initially consisted of four members. They disbanded in 2006 and then reunited in 2012. They kind of began with like a melodic indie style, but they evolved into more of a pop punk band after they got their major label signing in 97. And, you know, one thing around about the late 90s and early 2000s was there was a kind of a resurgence of like pop punk that was going on at the time. And, you know, if you're a punk purist, you don't like this.
No, you're talking about like, you know, Green Days and, you know, Offsprings and, you know, there's a lot of that going on.
But me personally, I'm not a punk purist, and I like hooks, so I think it's great. I love that type of sound. So they put out their fourth studio album, Wide Awake Board, on April 24th, and this is a track called American Psycho. Now, one important note that I found in my research that has to be mentioned, this album was partially recorded at Grandmaster Studios in L.A., and this is important because Vinnie Vincent recorded in this studio for the Guitarmageddon or Guitars from Hell album that never got released.
Was that around this same time?
No, that was in the early 90s.
Oh, okay.
That was with when Andre LaBelle was playing drums for him.
All right. But, that would have been before this band went and recorded.
So even in 2001, I can squeeze a Vinnie Vincent reference in.
We won't be playing any music, but you got to have some kind of reference, I guess.
That was the clincher to that song choice. I'm like, Vinnie Vincent connection, boom, picking that one.
Oh, wow.
No, actually, I like that song.
You've got an issue, man.
Yeah, I know.
You have problems.
Yeah, I know.
So we're rolling through May. We're doing pretty good cooking through the year 2001 right now. And in May, one of my favorite books, one of the best reads I've ever sat down and enjoyed came out. And that's Motley Crue, The Dirt. And I read that book, and when I got done, I thought, how the hell are these guys still alive?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
I wonder if it's a great work of fiction.
I don't know, man. I like the way it was set up. It was a very unique setup with the author basically interviewing all of them and then piecing it together chronologically so everybody had their say. Right. So, you know, some of it was fiction. But you could tell because some of the stories didn't match up. Exactly. Like, you know, Vince Neil would say, oh, he punched me first. And then Tommy Lee would say, no, no, he punched me first. Right. You know, but the story was all there. So you kind of got the gist of it from all sides.
Yeah, I'm referring more to the story of, like, knives and forks flying up into the ceiling and stuff during the... The writing of Shout at the Devil and all that. You remember that?
Cocaine's a crazy drug, man.
Exactly. Everyone around them was doing stuff, too. So, who knows what the hell. It's apparently being made into a movie
Mass hallucination. Yeah, they've been talking about that for years, man. I'd love to see it. It'd be great.
The guy who is
the
director of the Jackass movies apparently is in charge of getting the movie made now.
Right, because haven't they been talking about years and years ago, they've been saying Johnny Knoxville would be the one to play Nikki Sixx?
That was a rumor. Yeah. And then Ashton Kutcher was going to play Tommy Lee. I think that was another rumor.
That would have been good, but now them guys are all getting too
old. They're too old now.
You know, they're going to have to play the doped out versions.
Yeah. I'll watch it either way, but I don't know. You can never top the book, you know.
Nah, the book's awesome. You know, talk about a rock and roll debauchery. You want to read a book that just shows you just how crazy things were back in those times for a rock and roll band like Motley Crue. It'll blow your freaking mind if you've never read that book.
Yeah, and I had a whole new respect for Doc McGee. That guy put up with a lot of shit.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, man.
That book's available on Amazon. If you want to pick that up, go through the Decibel Geek link. I guarantee you, you'll love it. You'll say, if you've never read that book, you'll thank me for telling you to read it. We both recommend it. Awesome book. Back into the music now. Coming out with their 9th studio album in 2001, it's Megadeth. And they come back with A World Needs a Hero. The cover features a little mini Vic Rattlehead busting out of Dave Mustaine's chest all alien style.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a regular-sized Vic Rattlehead busting out of a giant Dave Mustaine? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Take your pick on that one.
Malaysia banned the album because of the cover. Said it was too violent. Their youth could not see something so crazy. And so this brings us up to 2001 for Megadeth. So after the backlash over the radio friendliness of 1999's Risk, The World Needs a Hero marks a return to a heavier sound, the sound that made Megadeth popular to begin with. See, definitely a callback to heavier times for Megadeth.
Yeah, that reminds me of that great Rust in Peace album.
Yeah, you know, the Return to Hangar, that one. It's a solid album all the way through, you know, and the mission was to prove to the world that Megadeth was a metal band. Mission accomplished on that one. Featuring Jimmy DeGrasso from Ozzy, Y&T, White Lion, Suicidal, Alice Cooper, you know.
Black Star Riders now.
Al Petrelli from Sabotage, Widowmaker, Alice Cooper. And, of course, Dave Ellefson. This would be his last appearance on a Megadeth album until 2011. And Megadeth would go on hiatus for a few years after this release.
Yeah, and they still are in musical chairs of members, right, as we speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're still back. They've never really returned. Dave's never taken it back to that radio-friendly sound from that period of time.
And
you know, it's like
he's made it clear he's not going to.
He made his money, and he got out and, you know, got back to making good metal music, which continues to this day.
Well, I read in his autobiography that he regrets doing the Risk album. You know, it was one of those things that seems like a good idea at the time, but I guess record company people were trying to push for the hit.
Right, because, you know, at that time, they were, you know, Megadeth was pumping out some good songs that they were playing on radio quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and at the time, that's where the money was at.
Yep, definitely. So we'll see. Make
your money and get back to the metal.
Yeah, and now I played Treble Charge earlier, and I'm going to play another band that most of you have never heard of.
I've heard of them.
Although I know Kiss fans have probably heard of this band.
That's why I've heard of them.
It's a band called Econoline Crush.
Seen them live back in like 90-something, late 90s.
Well, they opened a lot of dates for Kiss on the 96 reunion tour.
That's the year.
So that's where I first heard of them, too. But a little bit of information about them. This was their third full-length album. They're a band from Vancouver, Canada. They put out an album called Brand New History on May 15th. The album's produced by a guy named Bob Rock.
I've heard of him.
Who knows a little bit about Vancouver also.
Right.
Because Little Mountain Studio was up there in Vancouver.
He just looked out his door one day and saw there was a band recording across the street and said, come on over,
come
guys.
Over. Yeah. So this is Econoline Crush with a song called Trash. Remember when the reunion tour was going on, and as anyone who's a Kiss fan knows, opening bands typically don't fare well opening for, especially a reunited Kiss.
No.
This band, though, was an exception, because I remember reading a lot of reviews that people really actually enjoyed this band opening for them. So
Kiss fans are polite.
No, they're not. I've seen them boo so many opening bands off the stage. Oh, man.
No, when I seen them up in Minnesota, I think it was in Minneapolis, Econoline Crush opened, too, and I think they got to play out. Yeah.
I saw when they came here on the reunion tour, I think it was the band. You remember the band Caroline Spine?
Yeah, maybe that's one of them. Am I getting those two mixed up?
I don't know. I saw Caroline Spine here in 97.
Yeah.
And they got booed. It was not pretty.
Hmm. But I think I remember seeing them with the Nixon or the Melvins one time.
Oh, and then.
And the Melvins didn't really do it either.
On the Psycho Circus tour, I saw Power Man 5000 open for them.
Yeah?
That was not pretty.
No?
I liked them. I'm like one of a handful of people in the whole arena that actually dug them. Everyone else hated them.
Wow. Yeah. I wonder, sometimes it always made me wonder if Kiss purposely picked a band that wouldn't fit in good, the Kiss fans would tear them apart.
I don't know.
You know, there you go, kids. That's what it's like opening for Kiss.
Right, exactly. It was like Van Halen had Cool in the Gang on their last tour.
That's still...
That had to have been a David Lee Roth decision.
Had to have been. Oh, you know that. That was part of the condition of his return. Cool and the Gang opens the tour.
It would not surprise me at all.
So I'll have somebody cool to go hang out and smoke with.
Exactly. So we're still in May, and actually the same day that the Econoline Crush album came out on the 15th, on May 15th, Weezer released the Green album. And, you know, Weezer is a band that grew on me over the years. When they were huge in the, you know, early to mid-90s, I just wasn't feeling it with the Buddy Holly and the sweater song and all
but
that.
I was confused by Weezer because they mentioned Ace Frehley and Peter Criss in their songs and they had Kiss posters and the videos of their songs, you know, and it's like, but you guys aren't anything like Kiss. You got an Ace Frehley guitar strap and that's about the end of the connection I see here, so I'm confused. I want to like you, but I just can't, you know, because you're so far from what I like.
Yeah.
But when you break it down to the music, again, take away the image and everything and just break it down to the music, some awesome guitar hooks and, you know, catchy stuff going on in Weezer songs.
Well, and if you don't know the history of Weezer, before they became Weezer, like Rivers Cuomo and those guys were... They were a hair band.
Yeah, they were
Sunset Strip rock band.
Yeah,
there's
pictures.
I can't remember what the name of the band was, but they fit right in with all those hair bands.
Yeah, man. There's pictures of those guys with the long hair and all that. It's pretty cool.
And he's a shredding guitar player. He was all into Yngwie Malmsteen and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but they were smart. I mean, they saw where the trends were going, and they were like, well, let's completely redefine ourselves and redefine how we sound. And it worked.
Ended up redefining a whole genre.
Oh, they influenced
of music.
A ton of bands,
yeah.
Whether you like them or not.
Right.
But the Green album was their third studio album, produced by Rick Ocasek from The Cars. You know, another wise choice there with that type of sound, you know.
Yeah.
This was considered the band's comeback album from 1996 as Pinkerton. Now, you know, Pinkerton bombed after the Blue album, but Honestly, I like Pinkerton.
I do too. There's some good heavy stuff on there.
My college roommate had it, and I'm like, this is way better than that last album, but it did jack shit on the charts. This one did pretty well. It sold 1.6 million copies. During the period that between Pinkerton and this album, this is a 5-year break. Rivers went to Harvard University and got his degree, went into a deep depression, like would not leave his house for a long time.
Wow.
So there's like a whole drama behind how this album ended up coming about. The big singles off this album were Hash Pipe and Islands in the Sun. Both those songs did really good.
I really like Hash Pipe.
Hash Pipe's a great heavy song, but I figure everyone's heard plenty of that song.
Right.
So I wanted to pick something which has a really great hook. This is Weezer with Don't Let Go. What I think I like about that song and some of that sentiment that Weezer does in their songs is anyone that knows me knows I'm a huge fan of the Ramones End of the Century era,
right,
where they kind of brought that Wallace sound, 60s sound with Phil Spector on board, and they got a little bit more hooky. That stuff kind of reminds me of that era of the Ramones. I love that simple hook type song that they do.
Kind of bouncy, you know.
Yeah, I love that sound, but yeah, that's Weezer. That was their big comeback.
Heck yeah, man. Nothing wrong with Weezer. I'll take that. Let's see. Keep things going.
Ooh,
here.
Heavier side of Weezer episode.
We could totally do a heavier side of Weezer episode. We could turn a lot of people on
to
Weezer.
Send your hate mail to feedback at decibelgeek.com.
Or encourage us. Yeah, one or the other. Yeah. Another great album that came out in 2001 was the one and only full-length album released by the one-of-a-kind Betty Blowtorch. Album called Are You Man Enough? It was a follow-up to their 1999 debut EP, Get Off. And it features Bianca Butthole on lead vocals and bass, Blaring Bitch on lead guitar, Sharon Needles on rhythm guitar and vocals, and Judy Mollish on drums. This is straightforward, bad attitude, kick-ass rock and roll, and it's got some great tunes on this album. Songs like Size Queen, I'm Ugly, Hell on Wheels, Part-Time Hooker, and the great advice of a song called Shut Up and Fuck. Awesome, man. I love that stuff so much.
I just watched the documentary on them the other night with my wife.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anybody out there wants to know anything about this band, you know, check it out. Betty Blowtorch and Betty Blowtorch and her amazing true life adventures. Yeah. A documentary directed by Antonio Scarpa. And it's, you know, they got such a short history that it's the whole thing is pretty much covered in that.
It's a great documentary. And yeah, like I just turned it on to watch before going to bed, and my wife's sitting there reading, and they think they're playing Hell on Wheels in the intro.
Yeah.
It's them on stage filming the
love
video.
That song.
And she looked up. She's like, who is that? And I was like, Betty Blowtorch. She's like, they're really good.
Yeah, so, yeah, really like, good.
And my wife is not a hard rock fan, so for that's her to say that is a big deal.
That's one of the most heartbreaking things ever, is the fact that that band was never able to continue on and create more music because it was so good. You know, yeah. Just for it as being, you know, simple, straight up rock and roll.
Yeah.
Like I said, so much attitude in it, you know, just amazing stuff. I remember, because I was on radio in 2001, and we got the single for Hell on Wheels.
Hell on Wheels, yeah.
I played the shit out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't necessarily supposed to be playing the shit out of it, but no. it struck me in such a way that in 2001, I felt like this is the kind of music we need to be putting out there to get us out of this weird, yeah. you know, kind of funk that I feel like we've been in here lately.
It was a strange time for music. I mean, we're playing you nuggets that we found.
Right.
But it was, I think this may have been the hardest struggle to find great stuff to play for a year in review. But
maybe.
It's an interesting year, so we wanted to still cover it, though.
Right.
Don't worry, we're going to go back to the 70s and 80s soon. But,
oh, sure, of
but,
course.
But, you know, we got to cover the 2000s, too, you know.
Yeah. Sharon Needles is a member of Angus Young's favorite AC/DC tribute band, Hell's Bells. Mm-hmm. Bells, B-E-L-L-E-S.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Blair and Bitch is the lead guitarist for Black Sabbath.
Yep.
That's cool. My favorite internet buddy, Judy Mollish, a.k.a. Judy Kakuza, is the drummer of the awesome all-female Kiss tribute band, Priss. Who got a lot of praise for their performance on Kiss Cruise 4.
Huh. I wonder Very if those cool. girls ever get back together and, you know, do any of the old tunes.
I don't know.
It'd
I
be mean, hard to do it without without Bianca.
Yeah, without Bianca Halsted, it'd be pretty much impossible to do Betty Blowtorch.
She kind of was the band,
yeah. Yeah, had so much of that energy. I mean, man, it's sad. But, you know, I'm glad the rest of them are out doing stuff. Shout out to Judy. She's awesome.
Awesome. So, okay, we're still in June. You got the next pick.
All right, June, talking about what's popular. After making a huge name for themselves as an earlier act on the 2001 Ozfest tour, Drowning Pool releases their massive debut album, Sinner, in 2001. It's influenced by thrash metal giants like Metallica, Anthrax, and Testament, and it reflects in the music. Great heavy tunes on this one, like the title track, the song Follow, a tune called I Am, a great song called Tear Away, and let me know if you've ever heard this one before. That everyone has heard this song somewhere.
Yeah, there's like a video of a parrot singing it on the internet.
Really?
Yeah, you haven't seen that yet?
No.
Well, I'll show it to you when we take a break.
You know, it was a massive hit that year, and it continues to be used as theme songs and commercials for all kinds of stuff to this day.
Yeah.
You know, the overpopularity of that song kind of overshadows otherwise what's really a good metal album. You know, it kind of... The song was so popular, it almost takes away from the rest of it.
Didn't
you know
the song have controversy with something that happened later in the year?
Well, yeah, it did, you know, and also the song was allegedly used by interrogators at Guantanamo Bay as a form of torture.
Well, some people that don't like Drowning Pool would probably agree with that.
Well, they use a lot of
I always like that song.
Heavy
metal. I know it got overplayed a lot on the radio, but it's a great riff. It really is.
Yeah, it's a great band. You know, in 2001, lead vocalist Dave Williams would be found dead on the tour bus.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
A victim of heart failure. You know?
Yeah, that was crazy.
I can't remember. It was either right before or right after they were supposed to play in Wisconsin when I was working on radio at the time. I think it was... I don't think they made it there. they were supposed to, or they just had just recently played there. I don't remember. Drowning Pool would continue with a variety of singers over the years, but would never reclaim the popularity that they had in 2001.
Are they still here? Still around?
They're still around. They're on like their fifth or sixth or seventh lead singer, I guess.
Remember when that dude died, I was like, they were like on their way up. They were going to be a huge band. I remember that. Wow.
Yeah, because if that guy would have stayed alive, Drowning Pool would have obviously kept going on the trajectory that they were on because they were huge, but... Once Dave Williams was gone again, you know,
drugs?
Just like now he had a heart condition.
Oh, wow.
It was heart failure.
That's messed up.
And
too young.
I know he was diabetic and because he and Brett Michaels kind of, you know, became friends.
Knew each other.
Yeah. Brett Michaels mentions him in a song on the Poison Hollyweird album.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So those guys had gotten tight at that time.
Too damn young to go. Jeez.
Yeah. And especially, like I said, you know, and you feel bad for the rest of the band, too, because they've never, you know, you're never going to replace that guy.
Nah.
Like Betty Blowtorch, you know, once a key member of the band is just gone like that, it's hard to continue on.
A lot of death in 2001.
Yeah, it really is. A whole lot.
It's our darkest episode.
It really is. Man. It really is.
So, well, you always were talking about some of the heavier bands of 2001.
Yeah, talking about Drowning Pool, you know, I'd say the heaviest of 2001 bands that came out with music that year, Slayer came out with one, Tool, Slipknot, Mushroomhead, Creator had a heavy album, System of a Down, Static X, and Fear Factory.
Yep.
Some of the best of the really heavy stuff, because we ain't got time to play everything.
Now, well, Fear Factory, you heard in the intro.
Yeah, we heard some Fear Factory, and I know some of you guys are just heavy metalheads that listen to this show sometimes, so got to at least give a shout out to those.
Of course.
Before I talk about the next album that I chose, which is by one of my favorite bands called Warrant.
Warrant.
Too funny.
Cherry Boy.
Yeah. Well, this is the sixth studio album. It's the final Warrant album to feature Janie Lane on lead vocals. At this point, Eric Turner and Jerry Dixon have stuck it out, but Stephen Sweet and Joey Allen are long gone. Instead, you get Billy Morris on lead guitar and Mike Fasano on drums. Not the classic lineup, but pretty damn good lineup nonetheless. It's an album of mostly covers of bands that have influenced the musical style of the band over the years. Bands like Cheap Trick, Aerosmith, Thin Lizzy, Michael Monroe. You get some Badfinger on there. Also includes music that is the final two original songs released by the Janie Lane era of Warrant. Warrant would go on to tour in support of this album as part of the Glam Slam Metal Jam, headlined by Poison, along with Enough's Enough, Great White, Quiet Riot, and the Bullet Boys. Pretty damn good lineup for a concert tour.
I remember that tour.
I'd pay to see that today.
Yeah.
For sure. The weird thing about it is the tour, after a show in Omaha, Nebraska, Bobby Dahl is rushed into emergency back surgery after suffering a spinal cord injury on stage. The surgery is a success, but he needs 6 months to heal. The rest of the Glam Slam Metal Jam tour is done. Canceled.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah. The songs, the last two Janie Lane Warrant era songs. It's kind of a sad thing.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth checking out for those songs alone. A tune called Face, and this one's called Subhuman.
To join America Online.
I planned all my vacations.
Get driving directions.
Email is fast, it's easy.
America Online. Call 1-800-4-ONLINE.
You know how fast you were going?
65.
63.
In this town.
Isn't the speed limit 65?
You don't mess with the law.
Yeah, it is.
Freaking help me.
Don't spit in that cop's burger.
It looked like spit to you.
Yeah.
Burger punk!
The law messes with you. Super Troopers.
They're coming back, man.
Pull the vehicle over.
I'm already pulled over.
He's already pulled over. He can't pull.
travel over any farther.
All right, you're listening to the Decibel Geek Podcast, and we are in the home stretch as we do a look back at the year 2001 through the eyes of rock and roll. You know how we do it around here. Having fun so far, been talking about some damn good music here today.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about sports, and now it's time to talk about the top movies of 2001. In the top 10 of 2001, you've got at number 10, Planet of the Apes, number 9, Jurassic Park 3, number 8, Ocean's 11, number 7, Pearl Harbor, number 6, The Mummy Returns, at number 5, you got Rush Hour 2, number 4, it's Monsters, Inc., number 3, Shrek, who could forget that?
Oh, yeah.
And number 2, Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, and number 1, man, it was the year of this guy, too, holy shit, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. That stuff's everywhere. Still, like, till now, it's still everywhere.
A lot of family type movies were big in 2001.
Shrek, yeah. Monsters Inc., all of that. You know, personally, my favorite, those movies were okay, but some of my favorites that came out in 2001 were like Hannibal, American Pie 2, The Fast and the Furious, the debut of that. That was pretty good. Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. Man, she looked good back then. Shallow Hal, remember that one?
I like that movie.
I like that one too. This one I really didn't like, but it was huge. That Moulin Rouge.
Oh yeah,
there was a big craze of that going on
there's
for a while.
There's a little bit of a Kiss cover in that one.
Yeah,
yeah. They sing part of "I Was Made for Loving You" at part of the movie.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I guess I never noticed that. My wife never clued me in on that.
it's a real quick thing.
Yeah. Also in 2001, that movie, A Knight's Tale. You ever see that?
Is that the Heath Ledger movie?
Yeah, and then they had, like, it would be like fighting swords in medieval times, but they'd be playing some Quiet Riot or
I like that movie a lot. Yeah, that was cool. Me and my wife both love that movie.
Yeah, The Animal came out in 2001. That was pretty funny. The movie Blow, remember that?
Great movie.
With Pee Wee Herman in it.
Yeah.
That was very cool.
Yeah,
that's a really wild movie.
It's a good drug movie.
Jeepers Creepers came out in 2001, the first one. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. That's a good
Kevin
one.
Smith. Yeah.
Can you believe this? In 2001, there was a movie, Crocodile Dundee in L.A.
I don't remember this.
I don't either. I looked it up, and
apparently
I was like,
nobody
what?
Else does either.
No way. There really was in 2001 a Crocodile Dundee movie.
Yikes.
Corky Romano in 2001. Saving Silverman. I like
that
one.
A good movie.
Another one I laughed my ass off watching this. Super Troopers.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
We can't pull over any further.
No, what I need you to do, right, meow?
Yeah. Jason X in space. That was a good one, though.
I
still like that. Mm-hmm. And I guess if I was going to name a 2001 movie of the year, it would be a toss-up. I'd almost want to give it to Joe Dirt.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have to go with Rockstar.
Rockstar.
That was pretty cool. Had all those awesome people starring in it. Zach Wilde, you know.
It's a good throwback to the old school hair bands.
It's a good rock movie. I like that.
Based on Judas Priest.
Yeah, loosely.
Loosely. The idea, and then they changed everything.
And then a bunch of other stuff, I guess they said they were influenced by.
The only thing they kept from the Judas Priest thing was when they're showing the fake magazine covers, the magazine covers are called Metal God. And that's initially what the movie was going to be called.
Yeah.
Because Rob Halford's called the Metal God.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing they kept.
I suppose they probably wanted to do it just on that story because that's such a unique story. Yeah. And we'll be getting into that later on, I guess next week. We'll talk a little Judas Priest, but... Yeah, the good movies of 2001, and that is what it is.
All right, so we're into June, and June is the last month we cover in part one, if you're new to the show. Stone Temple Pilots released Shangri-La-Di-Da on June 19th. This is their fifth studio album, produced by Brendan O'Brien. This was originally planned to be a double album dedicated to the memory of Andrew Wood.
Mm.
But the concept was vetoed by Atlantic Records,
the
record company.
Yeah, of course, Andrew Wood from Mother Love Bone.
Yes. And while recording the album, the band also worked on a documentary and a coffee table book, and neither of those got released.
Wow.
Limited footage of it was made available through the band's official website in the form of live performance-based music videos. The album, although being certified gold, it was a commercial disappointment for the band because the first four albums were much bigger than this one.
Right.
They kind of fell off a cliff commercially with this album. And I'll tell you this. I love Brendan O'Brien's production. In my opinion, the songs aren't there on this record.
No.
So I'm going to go ahead and save you a few bucks and play you the best song on the album. This is STP with a cool song called Dumb Love. There you go. That's the, in my opinion, the best track on the album.
Yeah, that is a pretty weak album. I'd say there's only really two good songs on there. That one and Hollywood Bitch is all right.
Yeah, that one's okay. It's just overall, it's just kind of a forgettable record, you know?
It
kind of
sucks.
But that song there, I could have heard that one on Core. I mean, that sounds like their old
stuff. Oh, yeah, it totally sounds like it would fit right in on Core.
And the DeLeo brothers, when they put together a good riff, it's really good.
Nice. Agreed.
So, all right.
So I guess you got one more, but before we get out of here, we want to thank everybody for hanging out with us today. You know, we like to do these year in reviews. It's a lot of homework. The running joke is you guys actually were supposed to get this like a month ago.
You were.
It seems like.
Yeah, but you got a really good Albums Unleashed instead.
Right. And, you know, some surprise phone calls out of nowhere that one day. So it all works out in the end. We promised it was coming, so it's here. But we want to remind you, of course, we got to tell you, go to iTunes, leave us a review. We're going to be doing something special with our iTunes reviews, the good ones that we get, because we get some really good ones.
Yeah.
And we think they deserve to be spotlighted. So in the future, we're going to be very soon spotlighting some iTunes reviews. So if you want an extra little spotlight for yourself, hurry up and get over there and leave us one before we start picking and choosing which ones we want to read on the air.
Yeah.
Also, you know, while you're at iTunes, subscribe to us. Makes it easy for you. You don't have to ever worry about missing an episode because every time one comes up, if you're subscribed, bam, you got it. It's a beautiful thing. And then iTunes says, look at all the subscription these guys got. Rock and roll truly must be alive and well. We're going to have to start knocking, you know, Jay-Z and Beyonce off our main page and start putting up bands like Sabbath and Kiss.
Hopefully.
It's the revolution that just, it's got to start somewhere.
Or Jay-Z and Kiss makeup.
Why not with us? Well, if it comes to that, then let's just quit now.
Rap rock?
Maybe.
Rap
maybe.
Rock.
Hmm. Rap rock. That'd be interesting.
Huh.
So anyway, I guess that's the good news. All the stuff you need to know. The website, of course, you know it, decibelgeek.com. Check out the articles. Got some cool things coming up very, very, very soon.
Yes.
Your close. Minds are going to be blown when it comes to the website. In the meantime, keep checking it out. We got amazing writers there putting out all kinds of cool stuff all the time. That's where you get your t-shirts. Everything you need is there or at the Facebook page or at iTunes.
Yep.
Or the other various places that we are.
We're everywhere.
We're everywhere.
All right, I get the last pick of the day. We're at June 20th. The seventh studio album from The Cult comes out.
I was so excited. Being a radio DJ, I was so excited when I knew this one was coming.
Yeah.
Going to be dropped off the station any day now. Any day, come on, drop it off.
It's an album called Beyond Good and Evil, and it was their first album in 6 years. It marked the return of Matt Sorum as the Cult's drummer.
Mm-hmm.
He had toured with the band on the Sonic Temple tour in 89 and 90, but this is the first time he actually recorded in the studio with them. Produced by Bob Rock. Busy guy.
Yeah, busy in 2001.
And
busy, you know, doing some good stuff.
I know our friend Ian from the Rock and Metal Combat podcast, he hates Bob Rock's production. I'm the opposite. I love the way he produces albums.
I do too.
He makes guitars and drums sound fucking massive, and that's what I like. So the title of this record is a reference to Friedrich Nietzsche's 1886 book of the same title, Beyond Good and Evil, and it briefly had the mock working title of Bring Me the Head of Dave Grohl.
Wow.
So I guess Ian Astbury's not a big Foo Fighters fan, apparently.
Guess not.
So that's it for this week. This is The Cult with Breathe, and we'll see you next week
for part two.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.